He is Justin Davis, user experience designer and patient presenter.
Patient presenter. That's not presenting to patients. I am a patient presenter, I suppose.
I don't know. Take it however you want.
I don't. Yeah, it's hard to say. And he is Aubrey Goodman, web services and web dev extraordinaire and composer of curriculums.
Oh, see.
And this is a story. This is a story about a man named Distilled, who. There we go. Or brood, as it might be called. This is a podcast called Distilled, where we talk about technology and design and all other manner of bullshit. And you can find it online at Distilled Radio or distilledpodcast.com. Either one will work. Distilled Radio on Twitter. I am Justin Davis. We already did intros. Whatever.
But you are at JWD2A.
That's right. And Aubrey is at Aubrey Goodman on Twitter. So hit us up there. And you can always grab this podcast on iTunes or maybe on even Stitcher. Is it on Stitcher if I search over
you know,
on
it's
Stitcher?
Funny you should mention that. Because Jake Filaramo said to me yesterday, I tried to find you guys on Stitcher, and it didn't show up anywhere. It's like,
really?
It didn't nothing. I didn't get anything.
Well,
I searched for Distilled. I'm like, did you Google it? Because if you Google it, you'll probably get it, and especially if you Google my name or yours.
Right. That's. I wonder what you have to do.
You're not doing so well on the SEO on your own.
Yeah, that's probably true. No, I've had to bury most of the results for my name just because they're all profane.
Yeah, and you nobody likes to see those mugshots anyway.
No, not
at
all.
No, that's just me.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right. Yeah, so anyway, welcome in. And today we're going to talk about, I'm looking on Stitcher because I'm just now obsessed with this. And no, I even tried Distilled Aubrey Goodman. Zero.
Nothing there.
So big, I guess you have to submit to them
maybe so
independently. Either way, we're going to talk today about curriculum and course design. We both have begun to tiptoe into the tumultuous waters of online education. I am in the midst of putting together my manifesto user experience design class, which basically takes you through every single thing I know. Actually, that's not true, because it would take like 10 years to teach. But it takes you through all the basics.
I was going to go the other way. Like, so you only have 20 minutes of content then?
God damn it. But it takes you through all the basics of user experience design, all the way from what is UX, how to do research, how to recruit users, how to do design from a high level, all the way down to page-by-page usability, all that, how to test your designs through usability testing, all of that kind of stuff in a course that I'm calling Practical User Experience Design, because it is very practical. It's stuff you can use tomorrow in your job in order to make the experiences you're designing better. Well,
that is if you're listening to this in late summer.
Right, yeah. After July 1st when it's supposed to be launched. That will be available on udemy.com and maybe also available on some other places as well. I'm still figuring out the distribution thing. But I'm in the middle of doing that. Aubrey's in the middle of also putting together a course. Do you want to explain yours?
Sure, why not?
So it's going to be good. It should be brief.
As Justin's expertise is in user experience design, and my expertise is in web service design and information architecture. So my course is tentatively titled Digital Ecosystems Effective Infrastructure Design. We will be covering object modeling, information architecture.
And I should note for a moment, I also cover information architecture, but it's a totally different type of information architecture.
Right.
Yeah.
But in order to find out the details, you're going to have to buy our courses and
That's right.
compare.
That's right.
Mine will go through not just conversation about the academic side of this, but actually digging into several examples of some common scenarios that app developers and product developers and strategists go through and consider in their delivering of some app or whatever it is. Service design as well fits into this category, but it'll be several examples of those real life kinds of scenarios where you'll use data locally on a device or remotely stored in the cloud or somewhere in between. And so mine doesn't have a scheduled availability date because I don't like to set deadlines for myself arbitrarily. So I don't know. Check it out sometime later this year.
Yeah. Sometime between now and 2017.
Yeah. Hopefully, by the time you have enjoyed my course content, it will have been published.
Right. Hopefully in that order. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I guess. Otherwise, you're just a good friend and have already, like,
just gotten it all for free.
Come into my office and ask me questions, but...
Right.
I really should start charging for that.
I know. I'm going to put a little jar outside my office, like the Lucy on the Peanuts. Mm-hmm. You know, the UX designer is in.
It's way in.
Yeah, way in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's awesome.
So today we're going to share some of our unexpected and completely expected woes in the development of such a curriculum. And I guess, I mean, I don't know if you've had any experience teaching in a classroom setting yourself. I taught in a mobile app design class at International Academy of Design and Technology, IADT, last year. That was a really amazing, rewarding experience, even though my class was only four people. You know, and I actually kind of, it's like, it's funny, all those years that I never really considered that class size mattered that much. And then when I was finally a teacher, it was like, holy shit. Yeah.
It matters a ton.
It matters so much. Because if there's 30 people trying to maintain their attentions while also answering questions without leaving anybody out is a challenge.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is very much. And I have not ever taught in a formal classroom setting. I've certainly done a lot of teaching through presenting and other various things. I've done workshops where I've held whole-day workshops and I've taught people through that and other various things, but not in a structured classroom per se.
So you think developing the curriculum and kind of organizing the high-level thoughts of... I mean, what we were talking about earlier today was how challenging it is to put into words the things that are innate to us. So after 15,000 hours of expertise development, we don't even think about how we go about solving the problems. Yep. We just get to doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really hard, right? Because as I was relaying to Aubrey earlier today, it's like when I sit down to sketch out an interface or I sit down to sketch out the flow through an application, I do it very intuitively. I am able to synthesize research and requirements and express that out into interface and architecture almost automatically and intuitively just because I've done it for so long. Right. Now, I'm doing it because I've learned a lot of tricks and a lot of methods and a lot of process that allows me to do that. It's not just, oh, I think it should be like this. There's a lot of science to it.
Yeah.
But I've internalized all that science so much so often that it's difficult when you try to break it down to say, wait, how exactly do I know that that screen comes after that? How did I make that decision? And there was a decision-making process, and I can defend it if I end up getting pinned back against it, which is a big part of my thing is defensible design. But that's, to me, that's been one of the most difficult parts, is trying to figure out how you do your own work. Mm. It's hard.
It is hard, and sometimes I feel like I don't even know.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that in the sort of cheeky way. I do, but it's a double meaning. It's that sometimes it's situational. Mm-hmm. So there will be scenarios where a certain interactivity idiom works really well. Mm-hmm. And then it can be even in the same app where that same exact interactivity strategy or approach doesn't work at all, or introduces even some gotchas.
Yep.
And I think we touched on a little again off the air here about how sometimes we encounter client drama and conflict.
Yep.
Where I mean, my big one is a lot of clients have complained to me over the years that I am often, I'll say no, and I don't explain why. And so some of them have gotten the impression that means I'm an asshole. And right. It's like, I'm just autocratically making decisions when, you know, they're the ones who own the business, and they're like, wait, but you're choosing our business direction without contribution. What's up with that? And, you know, it came a lot to me that I eventually came to the realization that it's better to just tell them why I don't tell them. Like, the why I'm not telling you is because I don't want to bore you with the details, not because I don't trust or value your input. Quite the opposite. And it has been challenging, I think, over the span of my consultancy to find a nice balance with that. Although, frankly, I think the sort of shoot from the hip Han Solo approach of just saying no and I'm not going to bother to explain it to you has a nice side effect of weeding out the clients I didn't want to work with anyway.
Well, that's true.
That I think is just a rationalization for my own behavior, which I clearly need to change. But you know, there's a balance here, and
right.
I think when we're talking about building a curriculum, you know, we're trying to explain to someone else how we come to understand that that's a no, we shouldn't do that. No, that strategy is going to lead to some issue. And, you know, instead of saying, well, that issue is going to look like this and we're probably going to encounter this, and going through all the rigmarole of explaining that, oftentimes I just err on the side of saying, no, don't do that. Do this other thing. But when it comes to curriculum development, there's no such thing as me telling someone what should and shouldn't be done, because I'm not going to be there. They're right. The ones who are going to make the decision.
Right.
And so it behooves us to explain to other people why we,
yep.
like the process we went through, which I think is interesting, because it, as you said, it challenges us to sort of say, like, wait, why did I think about it that way?
Right. Yeah. And I think you will. To me, I end up finding my own kind of blind spot. The thing that I get most worried about this curriculum thing is that I am forgetting big things. Like, I'm forgetting to mention big things that I've either internalized so deeply that I just don't even think to mention it, or just that I never think about, right? And that's like, so I've been, every unit that I've been creating, I've been going around to websites sort of as if I'm learning it for the first time, checking what other people say about the same subject to make sure that I haven't missed any big things. And it's helpful, because there have been a few things that I've thought, that I've noticed people say, oh, did you, you know, this is a specific type of this. For instance, we're talking about, I was doing the information architecture chapter, and I was talking about taxonomies and folksonomies, and these are organizational structures for data or for objects on a website, right? So it's how you organize, say, clothing in an e-commerce site or something like that. You can use taxonomy, you can use folksonomy. And as I was doing research, I realized a lot of people were talking about faceted classifications as well. Now, faceted classifications are where you have multiple paths to the same thing. So often in e-commerce, saying you could get to the same shirt by going men's outerwear shirts, but you could also go shirts men's, right?
Right.
Or you could go colors red and then men's and then shirts and or whatever.
So it's a,
it is
parallel,
right?
Decision path.
Right. And this is called a faceted classification. And I use these all the time. I design them all the time for clients. And I even talk about faceted search and all this. And I just completely forgot to put it in the information architecture. I just didn't even think about it.
Like,
and
no,
so when I kept seeing it come up, I was like, well, shit, I guess I need to talk about that, because that's obviously, everyone talks about it, so it's a pretty basic thing. So that's been, to me, one of the biggest learning points, is making sure that I'm hitting everything. And also knowing that you only have the thing about an online course, especially now in a classroom setting, you can go a lot deeper, because you have a lot more time.
There's also interactivity.
You can
see whether or not the person is getting it
right
by the bewildered look on their face.
Yes,
when
and there's Q&A, that type of thing. But online, it's a much shorter. I mean, a typical course, like my course, is going to be about 10 hours of video, probably. Now, that's a lot of video. There's no doubt about it. It's a lot of video. It's about 60 lectures.
Yeah, ask the video editor, which is you. Also.
Yeah, yeah. It's a ton.
How far did you get in so far?
I've actually now I'm in, think I've done, I've edited seven. I've edited everything I've taped.
Okay.
That I don't have to retape for other reasons.
Right. So you're up to maybe
a tenth.
18%.
Yeah. I don't even know. Maybe not even that high. Maybe 14%.
Seven out of 50, you said?
Seven out of 60.
60.
Yeah. So, yeah. It's more like 12% or something.
So you folks are going to get a great education for your money.
Oh, it's amazing, right? $199, what I'm probably going to price this at.
You know that you've said that out loud.
Yeah, I know,
you
right?
Can't take it back.
So give or take $100. Yeah. Actually,
I was going to say, I've been aiming at the $400 mark.
Yeah.
As I look into, you know, as I continue to evolve the curriculum, the course plan, lesson plan, I keep thinking, damn, there's a lot of value in here and I don't want to charge just like $100 for this.
Yeah.
Because that's an Apple TV. So how much value do I get out of an Apple TV?
Right, yeah.
Versus how much value would I get out of this course?
Right.
And
you know, there's going to be market dynamics that obviously determine that. I looked at the competitive landscape and said there's these other courses on UX that are similar.
Good way of doing it.
They're priced here and there. Interesting thing, two of those courses are priced $100 differently, one at $199, one at $99. They're both kind of overviews of UX type of thing. Mm. They take different approaches, whatever. They've both, if you calculate the top level revenue, multiply the price times attendees, they have the same level of revenue.
That's interesting.
So just the cheaper one is sold twice as many.
Right.
So anyway, that's I don't know if that's over the same time span or not, though, so it's hard to say. But either way,
in the end, I don't think the time matters.
No, probably not. And so, yeah, that's been the hardest thing, because you only have 10 hours. I mean, 10 hours is a lot, but at the same time, 10 hours is not a lot. And like I can't go into all the detail. I can't talk to you about I can't talk to you about why accordions are designed certain ways. I can't talk to you about certain specific interface controls because I just don't have the time.
Well, exactly. I mean, if you think about it, you're talking about distilling. Huh, you see what I did there?
Uh-huh.
Your 15,000 hours of expertise into 10 hours.
Right.
That's that's less than 0.1%.
Right. Yes.
So, if you're talking about boiling like a gallon of water, you're talking about getting down to like a thimble of content.
Exactly.
From a gallon.
Yes.
Maybe less.
Yeah, it's obscenely it's a very difficult job of sort of distilling.
Oh, I see what you did there.
All that down into what the most salient parts are, which I think brings me to my next point, and I thought about this driving over today, is, and I really should write a blog post about this because I think it's very important. My focus is more on process than it is on specific solutions, because I can't tell you how to design your thing if I am not designing it for you. I mean, if you're going to take this course, I can't tell you how to design your app. You may be designing an app, you may be designing an intranet, you may be designing an e-commerce site, a blog, any number of things, and I can't tell you this is how you design a blog. I can't tell you this is how you design this type of app. There's just too many of them. There's not enough time. It doesn't work that way, right?
But too much variation even.
There's too much variation. But what I can do is I can say, here's the process to follow. Do this, and then this, and then this, and then this. Here are the resources you can use to get you through that process. And if you do follow that process, you will design a good thing at the end of it. But you have to follow the process, you know?
Process is important.
Yeah.
But explaining that process to someone is hard.
It's hard.
Especially when you don't have it written down anywhere and you never really had a rigorous definition of it yourself.
Right.
That's the thing I love about teaching. It forces you to expand your own knowledge of the thing that you are allegedly an expert in.
Right. And you end up learning a lot more either because you reteach yourself things that you've either forgotten or forgotten that you knew and forgotten how to talk about them. Or you learn wholly new things. I mean, there's been a couple things that as I've been going through this, I'm like, oh, I never thought about that point. Okay, we'll put that in the curriculum and so I'm learning a little bit as I put it together as well. But my job is not to know everything. My job is to facilitate a curriculum to you so that you can learn everything. And that's what I think the job of a teacher really is. And this is an interesting other thing that I've thought about that is, it's a weird statement, I guess, but the job of an instructor is not to know the world and to teach the world. The job of an instructor is to understand how to go and gather information about a subject, synthesize that into a set of learnable steps, and distribute that to somebody. I mean, you could go learn UX yourself by going out into the web, but what you have is you have me organizing it for you right. and telling you what you need to pay attention to and what you don't need to pay attention to. That's where the value of instruction, I think, comes in. Not that I know everything about UX.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I do.
Anyway, that's my little thing. So it's a very hard, this is a very humbling process.
Oh,
yes. Because sure. you think, I'm an expert at this thing, and then you realize, holy shit, I don't know how to convince people that I'm an expert at this thing.
It's a funny thing, sidebar, about expertise. Because in a way, community illustrates expertise implicitly in the sense that the old idiom, the cream rises to the top.
Mm-hmm.
So people will notice you because other people noticed you and then they talk about you.
Social proof.
Right, yep. Social proof. So if you find yourself trying to convince people of your expertise, maybe you don't have any.
Right. Yeah.
Instead of spending the time convincing other people that they should care, spend the time developing the expertise.
Yeah.
And then the rest will follow. I guess the same thing as my attitude about customer retention and acquisition and proving a startup, and we'll get off the sidebar here shortly. If you have to try to explain to people why they should care about your product, then you don't have one, or you don't have one that they want.
Right.
If they're beating down your door trying to pay you, then you have a product.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
And so I think we have both had people express interest in our teaching in some way,
mm-hmm.
and also expressing appreciation for what we do for the community as it is. I know a lot of people get a lot of value out of the homepage throwdown, for example,
yep.
and I find that rather convenient for you because there's not a way for information architects to be rock stars. We usually are like the guys getting thrown under the bus,
right? Yeah,
not getting our face plastered on the side of the bus.
Yeah, I've very carefully chosen a profession by which it's easy to carve out little moments of whatever, easy performance, I guess.
Cunning plan for success and brilliance.
Yes, exactly. This is why I don't do development professionally.
Yeah.
You think that's by chance.
No, it's careful choice.
That's right.
Whereas what I do is just, again, Han Solo right. shooting from the hip, hoping that Cowboy is good enough. But off the sidebar, back to curriculum. let's talk about audience for a second. Now, I'm curious. Now, you've done more research into Udemy and mm-hmm. some of the other options out there. What are the interactive options? Like, when you buy a Udemy course,
yep.
do you have access to, like, an email address that you can communicate with the author of that course, the instructor?
There is a discussion room.
Okay, so they do have a facility
yep.
for it.
They have a facility for it.
The Khan Academy doesn't. They're all YouTube
really?
Clips. Like, how do you interact with a YouTube
yeah,
clip?
No.
You it's can comment, but there's 50,000 other people commenting, like, great, would buy again, A++++.
Right.
Like,
Yeah, no, this is much different than that. It's as far as I've seen, and I've enrolled in a couple of Udemy courses, and I haven't participated in the discussions, but I need to just to see how it works. But there's essentially a discussion room that I think they just dump everybody into, and they say, here you go. I don't know if it's threaded
like an IRC
or if it's like
chat.
That seems like that wouldn't work very well, especially if 7,000 students in one course. So I imagine it's got to be more structured than that.
It's like going to a concert and having the guy on stage be like, okay, show of hands, who wants a t-shirt? And then like everybody puts their hand up. You're like, oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah, okay, no, that's going to be a while.
Yeah,
I'm gonna need more to organization.
Okay,
here.
There's a sign-up sheet over there.
Right, yeah, exactly.
And then like managing the sign-up sheet. Like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
We need like a lot more pages on this clipboard.
See above comment about process. Yeah. And so... yeah, I don't know if it's a threaded discussion thing, but I do know on every course it's like a community of 7,000 students learning together, blah, 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 whatever it is. So there is a facility for that. Okay. I don't know if the instructor, and I would imagine the answer is going to be no, if the instructor has a direct pipe to the students in that you get an email address. Mm-hmm. So say you could email them all when you have a new course that's come out, or you have an addition to the course,
so like cross
or something
promotion.
Like that. Right. Right. Which would be nice to do because it would increase your ability to, but it would also increase the amount of static that a user is experiencing as well.
Well, yeah. So it's a balance and a trade-off as with everything else. Yep. You have a signal and a noise factor. There's,
yep,
50,000 other people trying to sell their Udemy course on Udemy. And so Udemy is going to do something, probably something like featured courses.
Yep, which
or
they will do.
Some kind of cookie-based search thing. Yep. If you search for all these popular searches with these cookies or these search terms, we're going to show you sidebar content that's,
yep,
related in some way. And that's great. I mean, they're earning their 50% for sure in,
yeah,
that scenario.
Yeah.
So, and then that's an interesting point too. I actually, so with Udemy specifically, they take half,
mm-hmm,
of all your revenues from
that they drive.
Right. And the way that they define the difference,
yes,
is if the person who buys your course
signs up for Udemy
at the same time as they buy your course,
yes,
then you get 97%.
Yep. That's correct.
And I like that because it means basically when I bring a Udemy user to Udemy,
yeah,
I am essentially acting as a, like, there's a commission,
yeah,
involved, but my commission is essentially like the extra 47%.
Right. Yeah. Although
I think that's a bit steep, honestly.
I don't think it's steep at all. In fact, I think it should be 100%. I don't know why they're even taking three off the,
well,
top,
no, no,
of,
no,
that.
No, I mean the 50% is steep.
Oh.
Like, I think 20 to 40 seems a little more
to
reasonable.
To Udemy or to the instructor?
To Udemy.
Yes.
When you look at commission structures, like most sales commissions are in the 20% range.
Yep.
The app stores, Google and Apple, both take 30%.
Yep.
So 50 seems kind of a lot, but
it's
again,
high.
It comes down to what they're offering. If they bring me 10,000 people who are going to pay $100 for my course,
right,
or 400, depending on the final price,
right.
if they can bring 10,000 people who are willing to pay me $400 each, that's awesome. I'll happily,
yes,
give half of that to them.
Sure, yeah. I'll take the $2 million that's, right, left over. Not a problem. Yeah.
I'm not sweating the,
yeah,
the percentage then. It's when there's only 50 buyers that,
right,
it becomes an issue.
Yeah, I'm a little concerned. And the great thing about doing this is if you record this with modularity in mind, knowing that you can record a course and you could go take it to Skillshare, you could take it to Udemy, you could, mm-hmm, go take it to any number of these platforms because they don't have any kind of exclusive license to what you're doing, right? It's very
important. Yeah.
Very important.
If they did, I would not sign
I
up.
Wouldn't. No, I wouldn't either. And I don't think
unless
they'd get
they
anybody
guarantee.
To.
If they'd have to guarantee
a certain amount of
a
money.
Minimum, right, number of actual buyers.
That's right.
Like, and I don't see them doing that. Their,
no,
lawyers are going, whoa, don't say it. Guarantee. No.
Exactly. But I worry a little bit about the heavy 50% thing, and I also worry about the number of promotions that they run. Because, like, right now, they're a promotion. You can take any Udemy course for $19. So somebody could get your $400 course for $19.
And you get half of that.
And you get half of that.
That,
so you're
going
to get $10.
That won't even buy a beer.
Right.
A martini.
Yeah.
It'll buy a beer, but not a martini.
Right. And so I'm a little nervous that if you had 1,000 people who all bought it for $19 and you get half of that, you're not going to make any money on this, right?
No.
So I think that market pressures will demand that they, because they used to do 30%. They had 30%,
mm-hmm,
last October, and then they changed it to 50%, and it pissed a lot of people off.
As it should, I think.
So we'll see if it stays. Yeah. And we'll see what the other outlets are. It may be that you decide after a while, you know what? We'll take it off Udemy, and or just put it on every one of them and just make up with the other ones what you're losing on
Maybe
Udemy.
Maybe that's it.
You know?
That's just a blanket strategy, kind of like carpet bombing.
Yeah, that's it.
So we're out of time here. I just want to mention also check out on June 19th at Three Daughters Brewing, Collaborative Technologies of Tampa Bay. Sylvia Martinez and Marianne Bowers are throwing a party and having a lot of techies and geeks and nerds showing up and talking tech. So be sure to check that out.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But, you know, we do our best to bring you good content every week here, and we will endeavor to continue to do that and over the course of our courses as well as our podcast.
And I think I'll probably spin up a special discount code for the Distilled audience as well. So
there you go.
Listen out for that in the next few weeks.
All right.
We'll talk to you all then.
Thanks for listening, folks.